Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and this is Wheeler Dealer Radio. We're back to discuss a 1-0 victory over Newcastle United, and we have two out of our three regular panelists today. Unfortunately, Rob in the Moussa Sissoko news desk could not be with us. I'd like to think of something embarrassing to say about Rob in case he's listening to this with his fiance, but I can't. So just, Rob, assume I said something about your sex life or something here. Moving on, we have back with us this week, it's Ben Daniels, fresh from his sabbatical. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm good. Dry January is over, and I'm feeling recharged.
So what are you drinking tonight? Maybe the only time I'll ever ask that question on this podcast.
I am drinking a cherry apricot vanilla Berliner Weiss.
Jesus Christ.
From Trim Tab Brewing in Alabama. It's very good.
You're making that up. If you like sours. You're making that's not a real beer. That's
it's a real beer.
Ugh. Next up, we have coming to us from the slopes of Miami. It is Brian Ashlock. Brian, how's it going?
It's going great.
What are you up to tonight, Brian?
Well, you didn't ask, but I will tell you that I am drinking wine straight from the bottle. So it's a great Thursday night.
A Tottenham tradition.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, let's jump right in. Tottenham Hotspur had, I'll go ahead and call it, a comfortable win against Newcastle. It was 1-0, a late winner from Heung-Min Son, who is really proving his value to the team right now. As if Michael were here and not betraying us on his Patreon, might say he has taken the leap this season. But, Brian, despite the fact that, you know, this is a 1-0 win, it was a pretty comfortable 1-0 win, correct?
Yeah, after we scored that goal, it was very comfortable.
I don't know, I thought it was pretty comfortable before it, honestly.
No,
oh
I mean,
my
look,
God.
It was very much like the Watford game before it, one of those games where you're like, we're going to get footballed in this game.
See, I think Son scored right, at least for me, Son scored that goal right before my brain went there.
It was already the 80-something minute.
Yeah, like, I don't know, I'm just talking about how it felt, Ben. Like, you can't, you know, you got to respect my feelings over here.
I don't. Your feelings are dumb. I was fully resigned to our first draw of the season by like halftime.
And so, I mean, I guess if you're going to call it comfortable, if we're gonna continue to use that word because that's what Greg wants to call it. It was only comfortable in that Newcastle were not really doing anything to challenge us.
They had one chance, or at least it felt like they had one chance in the whole match.
They had one chance, and it came like probably what in like the 15th or the 20th minute or something like that, early on in the game, anyway. And then after that, they didn't really do much of anything. They didn't counter. Solomon Rondon was their main striker, and so it's not like they were able to pump balls in behind our high defensive line. And you know Rafa Benitez had them set up to be very solid, and it's kind of you know a system that has worked for them you know against Chelsea, against Manchester City most recently. You know they made themselves hard to beat, and it really did take an error from Dubravka on the Sun chance to get us the win. Now, if I can do the Michael Cayley thing, the XG for this game was significantly in Spurs' favor. Like, we had a ton of good chances. You know, Lamella hit the bar. Lucas Moura had an open header in the six-yard box. Like, we created a ton of stuff, but we
Sissoko
just
almost
not
put one in the corner. I mean,
yeah, Eriksen missed some, had some shots that went just wide, like, and we really scored on a really low XG chance on a shot from outside the box by Heung-Min Son, but it was enough. And I guess if you are an optimist, which apparently is what Greg is today, you would think that we were going to score a goal, but I think most people were like me, and we were sitting there like, oh my God, why is this happening to us?
I don't know. Usually I am that guy. For whatever reason, maybe because I was smelling Vince's delicious broth, I don't know why it was. I had not gone to that place yet. I feel like I was not far from that place, but I had not gone there yet.
I'm sorry. Without context, smelling Vince's delicious broth sounds very gross.
I was at occasional Wheeler Dealer Radio podcast guest Vinny Bag of Donuts apartment in New York, and he was cooking broth all day. So that is what that means. But
maybe it
put me in a good emotional place. I don't know, but I had not gotten there yet. I thought we were playing pretty well. Certainly, I don't think a goal was certain, but I don't know. I felt like something was coming, and then, of course, you know, that's when Newcastle chooses to fuck up.
Delicious broth.
Vince just has to make broth every Sunday for the rest of the year. Because we're playing on every Sunday for the rest of the year.
Yeah, so I do not share your optimism. I mean, we missed a lot of chances. We did not look like we were set up especially well to counter Newcastle's, you know, deep defensive line. We pumped a lot of crosses at Lucas Moura, who's one of the shorter guys on our team. You know,
he can jump really high, to be fair. But
yeah, he's very good at jumping.
But it's hard to do headers with that little hair, I think.
You'd think it'd make it easier.
And I feel like it makes the surface, you know, slicker. And so, you know, the ball just tends to slide off and go in weird directions.
I can't believe we're talking about that.
Oh, it's science, Greg.
Oh, is it? Is that what it is, Ben?
It is. Yeah, so, you know, it was a terrifying testament to, like, where we are right now with injuries that I was desperately hoping for Fernando Llorente's introduction into the match so someone could get on all of our crosses. But that's where we are, and it worked.
So do you think... I mean, keeping in mind, as you just said, we're in the middle of an injury crisis and we have limited resources available to us. Do you think we took the right approach?
I don't. I mean, if our game plan was to camp in Newcastle's half and whip crosses to a lone striker in the box, that lone striker should not have been Lucas Moura. It was especially frustrating because we've seen Sonny deployed as a striker really effectively, and like, even if that's the personnel we're going with, I don't understand why Lucas wasn't the one dribbling down the wing and putting in crosses so Heung-min Son, who is, you know, comfortably over 6 feet tall, could be the one getting on the end of him instead of the other way around.
Is he comfortably over 6 feet tall?
I don't know. He's definitely over 6 feet tall.
I mean, he's taller than Moura.
He's not Peter Crouch, but like, he's like 6'1 or so.
All right, maybe.
I think that's comfortable.
I think the thing is just like you said, you knew kind of how Newcastle were going to set up in this match. You knew that they were going to put guys behind the ball and they were going to allow you time and space. And if you have time and space, then Fernando Llorente makes sense because then he doesn't have to move that much. He can just basically camp around the top of the box, you know, move 6 or 8 yards into the box when needed, and he can be effective that way. If we're having to play on the counter, this lineup made a lot more sense, but that's just not the way this match played out.
Yeah, it seems like in hindsight, I would have maybe switched the like Lamella and Lucas lineup choices for the Watford game and let Fernando Llorente play in this match. But, you know, I think as a result, we made harder work of both of those matches than we needed to. But ultimately it worked out. I mean, the reality is like Fernando Llorente can't go 3 matches in a week. So someone...
Let's be real. Fernando Llorente can't go 1 match in a week. But yeah, it was probably a choice that Abby made. It is questionable, like you said, Ben, about how we chose to use Lucas and Son in this match, because we know Son works as a pure striker. And Lucas seems to have had most of his success, at least after his initial start this season, as a ball-progressing player. So I'm not quite sure what we were trying to do there. Maybe we were just trying to hit Newcastle faster when transitions did happen. I'm not sure what he was thinking, but it's a little questionable.
The decision that I thought was most interesting was starting Vertonghen as a left back.
I don't know. If everybody's hurt, that makes a lot of sense.
But everybody wasn't hurt because Danny Rose played.
I guess
if you're trying to manage Danny Rose's...
I was about to say, I'm never going to entire... At this point in the season, with what we've seen, I'm not going to be too outraged if the team thinks Danny Rose needs a day off because of his minute management. That's not going to...
Especially with Ben Davis out and the Champions League coming up next week, like, the last thing we need is to overwork Danny Rose and, you know, have him get injured.
But the thing I enjoyed about the decision, though, was that Jan Vertonghen is still obviously our best left back. Somehow, despite being 30 years old. He was great. I think it was Ben that made the joke on Twitter that, you know, something to the effect of, you know, Vertonghen out here reminding people that he made the PFA team of the year for the first time as a left back.
I mean, I'm not sure, especially post-injury. I'd like to test this theory against a more attacking team, but it worked out on...
I think if you're playing a team that's going to camp like this, I think...
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yes, it worked out against Newcastle.
He is better on the ball than Ben Davies. He's a better crosser than Danny Rose. Like, obviously, Rose is much more athletic and able to get up and down the field a lot better. And I don't think Ben Davies is better at anything than him. But, you know, just assume that he's a natural left back or whatever. Vertonghen looked great out there. I don't think his crossing numbers were actually that good. But the crosses themselves, just on like the eye test, they were significantly better than anything we've had come from the left back spot in a while.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was like unfortunate about having Lucas up there, is like he whipped in dangerous looking crosses to vaguely dangerous seeming areas. There just wasn't a tall person there to put their head on him.
And the problem with relying on a guy like Lucas to get on...
Like, are those dangerous crosses then if they're not, like, to anybody? But, like, there were some that just, like, just skimmed over Lucas's head. Or, you know, like, Lucas got beaten by the center back, too. And it's just like, those were very, very good balls.
Well, yeah, and the indictment is, like, on crossing as a tactical decision. But, you know, from... If you're just evaluating the quality of those crosses, you know, they were objectively good, even though the decision to make them was poor.
Plus, my favorite thing about him being a fullback is you get to see all of his reactions to things that happen in the attacking third now. And so, like, when he makes a cross and, like, he makes the cross in, like I don't know, the first, like, 20, 30 minutes that Lamella hits onto the bar, and you can just see him like standing over at the side of the pitch closest to the camera, and like his hands down by his side and his head thrown back, like, ah, god damn it, you guys.
Yeah, he is so passionate about attacking and scoring goals. Like, nobody but Harry Kane loves goals more than Jan Vertonghen, and it's a really cruel irony that he's forced to play center back his whole career, because he just loves goals.
I really think that, like, you know, we've talked about, like, some of the players that are on this team's, like, place in Spurs history, and I don't think Vertonghen will have, like, you know, a sort of Ledley King or Harry Kane or Gareth Bale or Luka Modric type place, but, like, he is by far my favorite player from, like, this era of Spurs. Like, putting aside that Moussa Dembele is obviously amazing and Harry Kane is going to be, like, not only a club legend, but a legend for the English Premier League, I think Jan Vertonghen is my favorite.
He has great body language. I mean, what's not to love?
He does, and he pulls down guys' pants, and, you know, he tries to score goals when we're winning meaningless matches in the last 30 minutes, and he's so much fun.
Yeah, he's a delight. I love
I think this game was his, like, 200th Premier League game, which I guess I didn't really realize.
Well, it seems like there should be more. I don't know.
Well, I guess that's the strange thing about Vertonghen is that, I mean, he's... all of us who are kind of newer fans have watched Vertonghen become a real institution at Spurs. And he's not Ledley King, but, you know, I have a hard time thinking of anybody who's become more identified with Tottenham over the last X amount of years than Vertonghen has been.
I mean, he's now played significantly more matches for us than he has for Ajax. He's at 200 league appearances and 269 overall.
Nice,
yeah. So, you know, and he made 220 total appearances for Ajax. So, like, we're coming to the point where he's now, you know, I believe we extended his contract recently. So we're coming to the point where he is significantly more identified with Spurs, and it might be the case where he, you know, kind of basically finishes out his career here. And
I mean, I don't think anybody's actually identified with Ajax, so like, no matter how many games they play there. It always feels like, you know, if they move abroad, that was just a step in the road to bigger and better
things. I think Vertonghen and a lot of those guys do identify with Ajax in the way that if you're an American sports fan, pro athletes identify with their college. That's where they came up. They were in the youth ranks. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, with maybe the exception of people in the Netherlands, you know, I think when you think of Vertonghen when he retires, it's going to be, you know, Spurs. Or is it going to be the team you think of?
No one's hanging an Ajax jersey in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. Except in the Netherlands.
Right. Except for those poor bastards who never make it out.
Speaking about players that will forever be associated with Tottenham Hotspur, let's talk a little more about Son. I don't know if it's because we miss him for a while and he comes back and Jesus Christ, isn't he good? And we just forgot about it a little bit, or that we've been so injured. So when he comes back, it feels like such a breath of fresh air. Or has he taken a step forward this year, Brian?
I don't know. I mean, he was really, really good last year, and he's been really, really good again this year. I don't. If I had numbers and everything, I could maybe say definitively that he's taken a step forward. I guess to me, watching games, he looks significantly more dangerous. And I think that Spurs are incorporating him into the way that they attack a little bit more than they did certainly 2 years ago, and maybe even, towards the middle part of last year when Harry Kane came back from his injuries.
Ben. Go ahead, Brian. I'm sorry.
I don't think I had anything more to say about it other than, like, he's just really good, and I just think this is kind of just the continuation of his development arc.
So, Ben, Go ahead. I'll follow up.
Sorry. I think if he's added anything to his game, which is a big part of making the leap, it's he's developed a consistency that I think he'd been lacking. You know, I think we'd always seen Sonny go every few games where, like, he'd just be really quiet for some reason. And, you know, his dribbling wouldn't come off and none of his shots would come off. And it was just like, it's just one of those days where it's not Sonny's day. And I feel like that's happening way, way, way more sporadically. And even when he's not, like, producing or scoring or whatever, which has been a while because he's scored in, like, every one of, like, the last 8 games. But, you know, I think he's just overall useful in a way that, like, even when he's quiet, he's never missing. And I think that kind of goes to something that Brian was saying about him just feeling more integrated as a natural part of our attack. Because, you know, when he first came, he was kind of like a man without a home, without a role. He was like, you know, fitting into an already working team. And then he kind of became good enough that he was hard to ignore. And now it just feels like, you know, he's one of desk, you know. It's like those 4 pillars of our attack, you know, that doesn't stand without Sonny.
Well, I mean, and we have, like, you know, specific games that you can point to where we've obviously game planned around Son's strengths. Like, you can look at the Chelsea game. And you can say, like, okay, yeah, like, part of the game plan was man-marking Jorginho with Dele Alli, but the other part of that game was getting Heung-Min Son isolated against Azpilicueta and, you know, the other defender on that side, and just playing balls over the top and letting him run at people. And you know, in the past, Heung-min Son has been at his best when we have counterattacked. Like, he had really good games against, like, Dortmund in the Champions League or Real Madrid in the Champions League when we, you know, played him as a second striker or played him as an out-and-out striker with Harry Kane playing the second striker and played balls into the channels or over the top for him to run onto. And what he's shown this year, I think, is an ability to, when we are in possession now, create his own shots and, you know, score important late goals, especially lately. And so if we're looking at him developing at all, like, that is the thing. Like Ben said, the consistency and the ability to do things in different situations.
So, Ben, this is my question to you. I think Spurs fans are all in some stage of a love affair with Son this year. Some of the smarter sort of journalists who cover English soccer, you know, say very glowing things about him, but I don't feel like his perception's up there as one of the most exciting attackers in the world. I don't feel like he's perceived that way. You don't see him linked to mega clubs. Yep. Occasionally you'll see like a Manchester United blog or something be like, oh, we should go get Son. And not to make transfer news the be-all and end-all, not that this matters to anyone except maybe Son and his agent, but why do you think it seems like Son is not regarded as highly as I think his talent sort of warrants? Because this isn't, whether or not he's taking the step this year, this him being excellent is not new. It's at least a year old at this point, if not longer. So why isn't he more highly regarded around world football? Because I don't feel like it matches his level of talent.
I think there are a couple of reasons. One is, you know, Harry Kane exists, and he kind of takes a lot of the oxygen about Spurs.
Because his mouth is always open.
Column inches. Yeah. Yes. He literally takes the oxygen. But, you know, like, I think there's not a lot of column inches devoted to the second best player on a team, unless, especially in England, unless they're, you know, an English superstar who happens to be behind some foreign superstar.
And it's worth pointing out that Dele Alli takes up some of that oxygen that Kane leaves behind, so because partially because
right,
he's
like,
English.
I mean, right. I mean, we saw Christian Eriksen has flown under the radar for years now. You know, he's finally getting seriously linked with moves to like Barcelona and Real Madrid, which, like, you know, he should have been for a while.
But Son scores goals, which was always one of Eriksen's problems. Problems, I say in air quotes, not like in terms of recognition, I mean, not actual problems.
I mean, you know, StatsBomb just wrote, like, a really glowing article about Heung-min Son and how he is one of the best wide forwards in the game. And, you know, he just does so many things well that, you know, he should be on people's radars. And Mike Goodman tweeted, you know, that Real Madrid should be looking at Heung-min Son as someone to sign as, like, a marquee kind of player. And he was
fucking
met with
Everton
a lot of
fans.
Yeah, like, leave our fucking players alone. They should sign Richarlison. But, you know, and I think it was met with a lot of skepticism and disdain. And Ryan made the comment on Twitter that, you know, Son being Asian, I think, is a big impediment to him being considered a superstar, which, you know, I think it is certainly something to consider. I mean,
so do you think that's racism, or do you think that's just you're not from a traditional football power? You know,
I mean,
we're going to be skeptical of you.
I mean, I think there's some of that, like, institutional racism, you know, leads to those impressions. And I think, you know, he doesn't play in, like, the Euros, so, you know, nobody really sees him shine on an international stage. At the World Cup, South Korea is not really good enough that he's shining on an international stage. You know, we haven't been that good in the Champions League in his time at Spurs. So, again, he's not getting a lot of international glowing attention. But, yeah, I mean, Son is quietly one of the most important players on this team. And, you know, any given day you can say, you know, is Sonny actually our best player? And it's not a crazy thing to say, you know. I'm happy for him to get overlooked as long as possible because I love him to death and he's phenomenal.
Well, it's very strange with, I mean, and I wasn't trying to cast this in a transfer kind of way, but because of what happened this year, I'm actually not worried about losing Son for at least another year or two.
Because I think he does feel not obligated, grateful to us, it seems. And he seems very happy here, which is, I think, one of the sort of low-key advantages Spurs have is, like, we're in London. You get to live in London and play for Tottenham. It's like, there are worse gigs out there.
Yeah, and hearing his comments when he's talking about, like, crying because he had to go to the Asian Cup and seeing us get knocked out of the FA Cup and the League Cup, you know, like, you trust that those emotions are real. He very much is a guy who candidly wears his heart on his sleeve. And like his passion for the club is there for the fans to see and enjoy, which is a thing, you know, sports fans love. So, yeah, yay Sonny.
Yeah, he's pretty fantastic. So we're in a bit of a weird situation because after we won this match, Liverpool finally, in what feels like for the first time since Steven Gerrard slipped against Chelsea, dropped points.
They dropped points earlier in the week, too.
That's true. That's twice in a row now. Still, my point stands. It feels like it had been a really fucking long time since Liverpool had dropped points before this past week. And weirdly enough, West Ham pulling a performance out of their ass that, you know, I feel like they never do us favors. So that was something. So Spurs are 5 points off the leaders now. Are we in a title race?
I mean, I think I made this comment before the show, but like if the point of a race is to not win it, then yeah, totally. We are absolutely in a title race.
I mean, the thing about Spurs these last few years is it's like we are always in Schrodinger's title race. And at any moment you can open that box and find out for sure whether we're in one or not, but that possibility exists and no one can ever definitively say whether it's true or not. You know, it's 5 points back. It's doable, you know, but City and Liverpool are both very good and it depends on both of them slipping up in a way that is highly unlikely. But you know, damn it, we're due.
I mean,
somebody deserves the injury struggles that we've had all season.
I mean, I think the bigger story out of all this is, you know, 7 points clear of fourth.
I think you're right. It would take a complete disaster for us not to finish in a Champions League spot. And I don't even mean like a disaster like Harry Redknapp's last year with us.
Bigger than Tottenham proportions.
I question our ability to fuck up that badly. And that's like saying something for this team.
And Chelsea is the team that's in fourth right now. And they're on a cold streak. And so United is the team that's kind of on the come right now, and they're 9 points behind.
Well, they've got the greatest manager in Europe coaching them at United, so, I mean, you know,
it's really great for them to have Sir Alex back.
Exactly.
But it's just like, you know, look, a lot of things have to go wrong for both Liverpool and Manchester City for Spurs to win the title.
No, everything has to go. Not everything. Right. Everything has to go right for us.
Has to go right for us, and a lot of things have to go wrong for them. So you know, look, maybe second is within the realm of possibility. Maybe, but I think it's very much more likely that we finish third in a two-horse race, and I think that's fine. Like I don't think a lot of us had title aspirations at the beginning of the season. And I think the only reason why you would be disappointed with a third place finish as we sit now is because we kind of got knocked out of both of the domestic cups right now.
I believe the comments of the commentator – oh, that's not delicate. I believe what the commentator said during – I want to say it was the FA Cup – that Spurs season was crumbling. That was the most important game of the year.
Obviously that's, you know, hyperbole and like in the moment and stuff like that. But it's just like, I think now with a 7 point cushion over fourth place and, you know, with, I don't know, what does 538 have us at? Like 2% to win the title or something like that? Like we should be focusing on the Champions League, like get through this tie with Dortmund, get some of our guys back and healthy. and then let's fucking go win the Champions League. Like, you know, like we don't really need to put all of our focus on winning the Premier League because we're not going to. And we all we have to do is kind of perform at our like base level to hold on to third spot. So let's go win the Champions League.
Well, I mean, let's think about
that'll
it this
be
way.
Easier.
Think about it this way.
Easier.
In order to win the Champions League, a lot has to go right. You could argue less needs to go right for Spurs to win the Champions League than, you know, what needs to go right for us to win the league.
Well, the thing is for Spurs to win the Champions League, we control our own destiny. Like, all we have to do is win our matches. Like, I mean, obviously that's made more difficult by the fact they have to play actual good teams, but like, even if Spurs win out in the Premier League, you still have to rely on both Liverpool and City dropping, you know, 5 points over the rest of the season.
I mean, that's what we have. But in the Champions League, conversely, you just, you know, you need what happened. I mean, honestly, you could see what we need Liverpool's path. We need a couple easy draws. We need to probably knock out one really good team and hope things go our way. And who the hell knows? Yeah. I think that's still unlikely, but it's probably more likely than winning the league, which is weird to say.
Yeah, I mean, we have to win the Champions League. We have 9 matches left, and we don't have to win all of them as long as we can win on aggregate. So, you know, in the league, we have 15 games left where we have to make up 5 points, which is, you know, 13 games left. So, yeah, we have to win 2 to 3 more games than Liverpool and City do over the course of the season, which, you know, we haven't done so far. So,
and do we play both of them?
Yes.
So, I mean, like, I think we have to go to both Anfield and the Etihad.
Mm-hmm.
So those aren't necessarily games that are easy or, you know, that are set up for us to win. So
yeah, we basically have to win both of them.
Yeah, and we do. Yeah, we absolutely have to win both of them to even have a hope of winning the league. And so, you know, the it's weird to say it, but the Champions League is a little more realistic, guys.
Well, it's so hard to like project the Champions League because, you know, if I was to, like I said, if we had sort of Liverpool's schedule from last year, I feel really confident about it. If we have to go face like Bayern Munich, Real. If we have to run through Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Liverpool to get to the final, then I'm feeling a little less, you know, enthusiastic about it. But then again, as we'll talk about in a minute, Royce is out. It looks like Royce is going to be out for Dortmund, and that makes them look a lot more beatable than they did, you know, a few weeks ago. So who the hell knows?
I say, let's just do it and be legends.
You know what? I think the Fyre Festival is a great, great thing to model our tactical strategy on. So,
yeah, just one long con until we win the trophy, and then people can find out that it was all a lie later.
Well, Enoch is clearly a long con, so that would fit very well, right, Ben?
Yeah, look, I'm prepared to do what it takes. That's all I'm going to say.
So, let's talk about the competition that we are destined to win. Let's talk about the Champions League. Brian, how is Dortmund looking coming into this match on Wednesday?
They're all right. So, like, Germany just came back from their winter break, like, at the end of January. And so, since they came back from break, they beat Leipzig. They beat Hanover 5-1. But then they drew with Eintracht Frankfurt and lost on penalties in the DFB Pokal to Werder Bremen. So, you know, they're I guess, at least in the last couple matches. And they've got a tougher match coming up against Hoffenheim this weekend. So Hoffenheim have been pretty good this season, I think. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you already touched on the Royce injury, which is going to be a big deal for them. But Dortmund have been really good this year, and they're winning the league by a fairly comfortable margin.
Yeah, and the thing about Royce going down, it means that Paco Alcacer, who has been their backup striker, is going to start. And as a backup striker, he scored 12 goals in about 100 minutes of play. So he is, how you would say, on fire right now. So, you know, there are sub effects there, but that's a lot of goals for a backup. So, you know, as good as Royce is, it's not like Dortmund are going to be impotent without him. And, you know, everyone's probably heard, you know, the rise of Jadon Sancho this season. And, you know, he'll be there making us regret not signing him when we had the opportunity.
Man, I still don't think we ever had that real opportunity, but...
Same for Pulisic, so, you know, whatever.
I mean, I don't think that was anyone we ever were seriously in contention for signing.
I don't know. I mean, look, I think Dortmund are good. I think, I mean, obviously their results speak for themselves. They are, I just had it up a second ago, but they're 7 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga over Gladbach. They're 7 points clear of Bayern as well. You know, so they've obviously played well this season. Lucien Favre, who, you know, everybody kind of thought was a weird fit for that team, given that he kind of plays a more conservative, more defensive style, has obviously worked out for them. You know, they still have lots of good young players. They still have guys like Pulisic, like Jadon Sancho, like Alcacer, and, you know. But I think we're better than them. We've beat them before. You know, they're not a significantly different team from the team we faced last year in the Champions League.
I mean, they're playing better now than they were then.
Sure. And, you know, they have a different manager. So, but I don't think that the talent is significantly better. I don't think that they're certain. I certainly don't think that they're a total mismatch for us. And I don't think that we're super underdogs or anything like that. I don't know what the betting markets are, but to me this feels more like a coin flip matchup than where you have one clear favorite.
I mean, I would say it's a coin flip with a healthy Harry Kane. A Harry Kane who appears to be rushing back from injury in time to play this game, you know.
When has that ever gone wrong?
Right. You know, so we're not obviously not a full strength Tottenham Hotspur right now, and you know that's gonna hurt.
I mean, well, I guess there is a weird factor here because Royce just went down, and it's not like they never played without him before. But if nothing else, Tottenham has had time to get used to figuring out a way around our misses this season. So, you know, we're at least gonna be a little more comfortable. Maybe if you're looking for the case for Tottenham, we certainly know how to play around our problems. Whether that's enough is a whole separate issue, but
I mean, I think the key for this is that the first leg is at Wembley. And so we have to come out and come away from the Wembley match with a significant advantage. That means no away goals, that means like a 2-0 win, something like that. 3-0, you know. If it comes 5-0, out of
the, whatever
5-0, 17-0, whatever, you know, like it, if we come out of this first leg at 1-1, at 2-1, 3-2, whatever.
6-9.
I don't think that'd be bad. That'd be bad for us. 9 away goals would be bad. Obviously, that'd be not nice. you know, like if we come out of that with like even a win, but with an away goal, it makes it a little bit tenuous because, you know, going to Dortmund Stadium, is tough. So we have the advantage of we get to play at home first and we can set the tone for the tie. The problem is that if Harry Kane's going to be fit, it's maybe not for this one, but for the second leg. And so I don't know how much attacking power we're going to have on this one, game. And, you know, Lucien Favre is sort of a pragmatic manager, and I don't know if he's going to be caught up in the same the same philosophy that that Dortmund were last year under, I think Bosch was still managing them at the time we played them, where they're going to try to attack and push us forward, or push forward against us, and then we're going to be able to catch them on the counter and over the top. I don't think Favre will fall for that. And so we have to figure out a way to break them down and to come away with a significant victory. I think 1-0 even is going to be tough to take into the next leg. Cool. Good job, guys.
So the question is only by how much will we win on our inevitable path to the Champions League victory.
Yeah, so I'm very concerned. You know, we've seen that Dyer is back, but he hasn't really fully integrated into the team. He's not really starting. But I'm worried about Dortmund hitting us on the break. And we have given up a lot of chances on the counter that have mercifully not gone in our last several matches. And I think our lightweight midfield could pose a big problem for us. But
you don't need a midfield, not when you just skip over it. I mean, I think Dyer's going to be healthy for this match. So
I don't think health is the issue. It seems like he's just not entirely on the same page.
Yeah, I don't know. He hasn't looked at his usual self yet, but now another week, who knows? We'll see if he gets a run out against Leicester, or maybe we'll just go with Musa Sissoko and Harry Winks and call it a day.
I mean, it's worked so far, right? What the hell?
Right.
So
it worked in the Champions League last year.
So let's talk about where this game is going to be played, because it's going to be played at Wembley because there are delays at opening our stadium. The rumor is now that depending on what happens with Crystal Palace in the FA Cup, that, you know, we'll be opening our stadium for that game. So I don't know. I feel like we've heard this before. They're planning test events, but nothing's really been officially announced. Ben, are we ever going to play in this new stadium?
No, there is no new stadium. I don't know. I mean, I've been a skeptic all season long when people were talking about December. That seemed laughable. And, you know, now we're talking about April. And it's like, at that point, are we really going to open it in April? Or are we going to just break this season off and wait? I mean, I think we should open it if we can this season and just give something to the long-suffering fans who have had to go to Wembley every week. But if the club decides to just call this season a wash and start it at the new White Hart Lane next year, I wouldn't be shocked.
I mean, the club, I think, will clearly open this the second they think they can get away with it, or get away with it. The second they're able to, I think they will open it, because it's been such a black eye on this season. I think there's other issues, but I think part of the reason the season hasn't felt as successful as it is because we were supposed to be in there in, like, what, October? And we're still not.
Yeah, we know we were supposed to open it in September.
Jesus.
Yeah, against Liverpool. Christ. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a minute, and I think there's a reason that, you know, I don't know. I would love to know if, ever since the delays, there's like been extra problems, or we're just being extra careful. It certainly seems like there have been extra problems, but I just wish we would open the fucking thing, because I'm tired of it sort of casting. I'm tired of like the bi-monthly Times article about how like stadium construction's delayed, and that gets paired with like three articles about guys we're not going to sign. And I'd at least like to just read about the guys we're not going to sign.
I mean, you know, like, look, I'm kind of like Ben, where like I think that, you know, opening it as soon as we can would be great, but I'm kind of resigned to the fact that we probably won't play in it until next year, which is frustrating, because all the pictures that you see from it, the pitch looks amazing, the stands look amazing, and so it's just like, what is the holdup here? Is it really just like the fire suppression systems and, you know, a few other things? Like, But I would, when it opens, I would like it to be done. You know, I don't want the inevitable photos to come out of like, oh, the stadium opened, and then like, oh, here's all this stuff that's not done. Look at the shitty job they did on the stadium. Like, you know, I don't really want that. I would almost rather we just continue to take the extra time and just write off this season as another season at Wembley. And maybe that's me as an American fan that's not attending games regularly at Wembley, that, you know, doesn't have an appreciation for the difficulty that it causes for fans that are local and that sort of stuff. But just from a sort of, you know, wider perspective, from a how like the club is perceived, we've already taken the hit on this. Like, let's just take the hit on it for the rest of the year and like, punt the ball down the field until next season.
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, you know, it looks like we're not opening this thing till April. So I guess, does that mean the next round of the, if we advance in the Champions League, we're not going to be able to play it in the new stadium?
I have no idea what the schedule is.
I mean, the Champions League schedule is so weird because they, at least for the round of 16, they do like the two separate weeks where it like rotates. Like, so there's like 3 weeks between the first leg and the second leg. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe if we got the second leg at home, assuming we advance, then maybe it could be at the new stadium. I don't know.
Something to look forward to, I suppose.
Yeehaw.
And on that note, it's time to wrap it up. Brian, where can people... Brian, let's mix it up this week. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
You can find me on Mastodon.
Ah, okay.
Tooting on Mastodon at Brett Rainbow. Final thoughts. Hey, you know what? This season has been fine for all the weird, stupid stuff that has happened. This has actually probably been in line with expectations. And we have the opportunity to still win a trophy. And we should be excited about that, and we should make a run at the Champions League, and we should really enjoy it because this is the last time we're going to see Pochettino managing Spurs.
I think it's worth focusing on something you said, that because I always use this sort of Sherwood AVB season as the barometer for how well-run this club was, because despite fucking up the managerial position and everything possibly going wrong that could go wrong, we still finished in sixth that year. I think this season might set a new bar for that, because it feels like literally everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong, and, you know, we look pretty locked into top four at this point, and that probably says something about how well-run Spurs are.
I mean, except we haven't made a signing in, like, 5 years.
And but, yet, you know, we're going to finish in the top four again.
I get. I mean, I don't know. I feel like not making signings maybe, is not the sign of a well-run club.
But my point is, like, a lot of the fundamentals are extremely solid if we can weather that. Obviously, that is not a long-term strategy, but I don't know. I think it says something about how well the club is run, at least used to be run.
It feels like a football manager challenge where you're like, all right, no signings. Let's see if I can win the Champions League. And maybe we'll do it. Who the fuck knows?
Ben, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
I mean, I think I'm thinking about it, and it's going to be really weird to look back, like, the past four seasons after Pochettino's first year. We have been, over that time, arguably the second best team in England, and we'll have not won a single title, and have seen four other teams win the league in that time. And none of them are us. And that's annoying, and I don't care for it. But also, like Brian said, with everything being as much of a disaster as it is, like, everything should feel terrible. And I don't know, I think it feels pretty good to be a Spurs fan right now. Like, we're doing really well this season against every odd that could exist. And that's fun. So... you know, even if we're just perennially second best, I say I'm enjoying the ride.
I would echo my
my friend's sentiments here. I think we should be very fairly happy with how well the club's done this year, considering all these difficulties. There are certainly discussions to be had over, are Spurs sort of maximizing the opportunities in front of them? Are we leaving money on the table, as it were? But we should still enjoy that we've done as well as we have this year, even with all the difficulties. So, good job, Tottenham. That's what we're saying. Just a bang-up year.
I mean, it's like we started the game scoring, like, 3 own goals just to give ourselves a challenge. And we really wish that we hadn't done that, but it looks like we might sneak a draw nonetheless. So,
I mean, it's what you have to do when you play Fernando Llorente. You just have to score those own goals.
That's right. Also, if we go the whole season without drawing, I honestly will be as excited about that as a championship. I don't care if it's silly, but...
Can we get you on tape saying that so we could put you next to that, like, bearded guy who says top fours are everything?
Yes.
I mean, we literally have him on tape saying that right now.
No, I want a video of Ben doing it.
Undrawables is my everything. No draws, 38 games, let's fucking do it.
It will be totally worth it because it'll be something we use to make fun of Arsenal, and they will, like, come back at us with stuff that is completely lacking in self-awareness, and it'll be extremely funny. So
I know we're trying to wrap up the podcast, but did you guys see on Twitter, it was either today or yesterday, but the Arsenal Supporters Trust is now very concerned that they have been surpassed by Tottenham Hotspur?
Were they in a coma or something?
This
is a fairly old state of affairs. Like,
when you're concerned about it, you were not when you're 10 points back or 12 or whatever the fuck it is. Like, this is when, not, you know, last year or, you know, the year before when you lucked into second place, even though you shouldn't have. But whatever. I thought that was hilarious. I'm like, oh yeah, we've been surpassed by Spurs.
This will be the third straight year finishing above them if we don't shit the bed. That's fun.
Is it?
Yeah, Leicester was 4 seasons ago.
God, that seems so
long ago. Second behind Chelsea, third behind City and United, and then now third behind Liverpool and City.
So yeah. I guess, you know, first of all, it's nice to know that other supporters groups or supporters trusts are focused on the important issues.
Yeah.
But, it really is kind of amazing. I know we were trying to wrap it up, but fuck it, let's talk about this for a second. Like, Arsenal have really not done well, and it's a transitional year, so I guess, you know, if I was being a little more objective, you want to give Emery another year or two to sort of clear out the mess of Wenger's departure. But, you know, given how everyone was saying how Arsenal's back and there's a new vibe at the Emirates and everyone's buying into what Emery had to say, I mean, it really seems to be falling apart lately because nothing's really gone super well for them since that game.
I think objectively, they're fine.
10 points off of Spurs in fucking February is not good.
Yeah, but I mean, they're only a few points. They're only a few points. They're 3 points off of fourth, which, you know, Champions League is
they're everything.
It's everything. And, you know, if you're Unai Emery and you're trying to undo 22 years of the Wenger era, and you've got a squad that is obviously flawed, you've got old players, you're relying on, you know, 57-year-old Stefan Lichtsteiner to play fullback, you've got Mustafi, who's horrible, you've got all these other players who are...
He's got Aaron Ramsey.
For now.
That's a guy you could build on.
So, you know, like, it's just, like, I'm fine with, you know, I'm super happy about us being ahead of Arsenal, but I also super don't want us to rest on our laurels and be like, oh, all right, we broke that curse of, you know, St. Tottenham's day and being below them for however many years it was, 15 or 500 or whatever it was. And, you know, I don't want to see it comfortable with that idea, because at a certain point, you know, Arsenal does have money and Unai Emery will have, you know, a plan and players, and he is not Arsene Wenger, and he will at some point build something that is capable of competing at the top of this league. And, you know, if we lose Pochettino, maybe we're right back down there competing with them.
Yeah, that's bleak.
Yeah, by the way, Brian. I am clearly Pochettino's leaving this summer, in case anybody was curious. So we should all enjoy it because he's fucking going to United at the end of the year.
You know what I think the most annoying thing about Arsenal is? Is they are going to win the Europa League this season, and they're going to be like, Spurs were in the Europa League for like 50 straight seasons and never won it. And I will be annoyed that we never won the Europa League.
Will that be more annoying for you because you're married to an Arsenal fan, or?
No, I mean, it'll just be annoying. Like, seeing United and Chelsea just, like, stumble into the Europa League and be like, I guess we'll win this thing. Like, that was annoying. You know, we were in that and took that competition fairly seriously, you know, several times without making a real dent in it. And if Arsenal just, you know, stumbles into it and decides, hey, let's just win yet another trophy while everything is falling apart around us, while Spurs once again go without a trophy, I will be annoyed.
Well, what was always great about our Europa League campaigns is, like, how we'd be doing, like, fine, and then we got to the business end of it, like the knockout stage or the semifinals or whatever, and then we'd lose to, like, spin the wheel, pick a team from Northern Europe that we should probably be beating. And somehow we'd lose to, like, this year it's fucking, I don't know, PSV Eindhoven before they got good again, or, you know.
I watched us lose to and go out to Genk or Ghent.
One of the two.
I don't know. Dele Alli kicked the shit out of somebody, and Vince was very upset and didn't think it was a red card, but it definitely was.
Well, hopefully Arsenal does the same thing, but probably not. So, you know what? We stayed very on brand at the end of the show, guys. I'm proud of us.
Yeah, we can't end on a happy note.
All right. Well, on this unhappy note, for Brian, for Ben, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Skip Jack, or Greg. Don't know why I'm using that name all of a sudden. I'm your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.